I was lucky enough to be in a region where public policy teams were being asked to create innovation in the life sciences to drive economic engines for the region. And I was able to observe those public policy teams, which were hierarchically staffed and created, but also interdisciplinary crafted and instated. And I got to watch people who thought they were talking about the same thing not talk about much at all. And it really started me thinking about interdisciplinary nature of things, but also about the collaborative nature of things and what models that we bring of collaboration. And from there, I started hearing about team science, science of teams. I met Steve Fiore at the in-group meeting, which is the Interdisciplinary Network for Group Research. And we started to talk about and introduce the idea of team science there as well. And since I've been at North Carolina State, I have taken full advantage of being at a physical science school and engineering school, as well as being in the research triangle. So for the last 3 years, I've been talking to team scientists, I've been following their students, I've been at the Environmental Protection Agency doing the same thing. So while today I'm going to talk much about is what my reflections are at the university level, those same things have happened in other places that I've looked at. As a communication scholar, I'm interested in three things: symbols, messages, and meanings. What symbols people use to create messages, and then how meanings are crafted from those messages. So that's kind of the linear part of the communication process, and that's what I'm interested in looking at. And in particular, to here, I'm looking at communication processes that influence innovation. So in university team science, one of the first things that I recognized is this was unlike any other team that I'd ever studied. And so what I started to look at, there were these cycles of conversation and lab work. And you might guess what cycle is strongest. People are in the lab 80 to 90% of the time, and probably in conversation 10 to 20% of the time. And they're in those conversations and in the lab at odd times. These are not easy teams to study. If you want to study the people who do the teamwork, they're not there between 8 and 5 Monday through Friday. And that's why Steve said, you know, one of the things that we do need is access to your teams. We do both quantitative and qualitative work, but my observations today come from my physical presence in the lab and in interviewing the scientists. There's considerable difficulty in their collaborating, and one reason is because they have multiple similar yet different projects. And that really talks to the incremental nature of science and how science is done. But we really start to wonder, is that really the nature of the scientific task, or is it how we've trained scientists to do their task? And those are two fundamental differences. And my guess is that we probably could do the training difference, and when I come to the end of my presentation, I hope that you'll see how. The teams are also distributed, and distributed in many ways. They're not just located geographically, but they're across many different institutions, many different disciplines, and that creates its own inherent set of problems. The other thing about the multidisciplinary input is that it's needed, but people aren't integrating it. So what we see in the teams is that there may be multiple disciplines in one institution in a team, but we don't see as much multiple discipline, multiple institutions across. So it starts to fade away. So the further the geographic locations, the further the time locations, the language locations, then the further the interdisciplinary nature and the multiple institutional nature starts to drop away. It's easier to get it when they're all co-located on one campus. Even in North Carolina, where there's University of North Carolina Chapel Hill and North Carolina State University within virtually 20 minutes of one another, they don't go see one another, they hold virtual conferences. You can drive 20 minutes. And they could sit face to face, but they don't do that. So it really starts then to break down how easy it is to work interdisciplinarity, and then how easy it is to work across institutions. The other compelling factor that I think that makes these kinds of teams different is that they're grant-driven. And that creates two unique problems. One, they're grant-driven for long periods of time, which mean we don't know the people who are going to be in our teams. They start with a small group of PIs. They're very centered, focused. Often they have some relational history, sometimes very positive, sometimes not so positive. But the people who are going to do the work in the lab, they don't know the PIs at that time. The PIs can't even identify who those people are out because they're students, doctoral students, postdoc students, and the grant is for 5 or 10 years. So it's a long stream of people and with a virtually unknown. The other kind of interesting thing about these teams is in the ones that I've observed is every student has to have a project. And when we start thinking that way, that every student has to lead a project, then that by its very nature starts to isolate and silo the project down rather than to expand it across institutions and across disciplines. The other thing I want to kind of talk about that's a little bit different here is that the PIs initiate the grant, and they're the ones that respond to the grant, and the work is done in the middle. And the people who do the work in the middle are not the people who write the grant or write the response to the grant. So then that legacy of the grant and its potential innovation, some of that can walk away without being captured. My focus in communication is on relationship factors, and these are the ones that I've noticed that have been the strongest in the groups that I have been observing. First, there's great demographic differences, and first I want to talk about faculty-student, and even when you're outside of the university domain, there's still these very hierarchical differences between senior folks and lower-level folks. It creates power differentials because people are evaluating one another. Do you continue on the grant? Do you get funding for the next year? Who's going to write your letters when you go out in the field? A lot of those power and status issues come up. It didn't surprise me on the mapping that women saw institutional support as being far, far higher needed than males because there are far fewer women in these fields. And oftentimes when I go to observe, it's one woman and a bunch of men in a team. It's like they've tried to, you know, distribute the women across the different teams, and I don't know that that's the best strategy. Because when we look at the bibliometric metrics of women who have women, there are more women in the team than there are men in terms of authorship, they have higher ISI impact ratings. So that's one thing we've noticed out of one center is that when there were more women on the team, the ISI impact factors actually went up and rather than the male-dominated teams. There's also a language proficiency issue. And so I'm not talking about language proficiency in terms of disciplinary language, but I'm talking about it just the language that we use to talk to each other every day. In the United States, we get many international graduate students. They're non-native English speakers. That creates a problem, but that's not all the problem. The problem is also because our U.S. native English speakers don't know another language. So the language problem is really two-way. And oftentimes, when people have an English proficiency issue dealing with their other team members, they're less likely to talk and collaborate and speak up. They may be thinking and doing, but they're not talking and collaborating the way that they could or should. There's also an interpersonal network factor, and this really goes out along many dimensions. Who likes who? If I don't like you, it's unlikely I'm going to ask you to be a PI on my grant, right? Who knows who is also important, and who wants who? That was an interesting process. I've been watching these teams in 5 and 10 year grants and centers that are federally funded grant centers, and I've watched them in the proposal stage, early stages of their funding, and late stages of their funding. And it's amazing to me how they sit and how the PIs will sit and talk about what students they want, what doctoral students they want, what postdoc students they want. So there's really these interpersonal relationships about who likes who knows who, and who wants to work with whom. And it comes from the top and goes down, never the other way. The other part of the interpersonal networks that make these kinds of teams very difficult is the authorship order. And if I don't know how many disciplines we have here in the room, I would say upwards of 20, 25, we probably all have different disciplinary norms for how we put our names on articles. This creates a very difficult problem when it's an interdisciplinary article, as an interdisciplinary team. We find that authorship order is complicated, it's competitive, and it has to be negotiated. And oftentimes it's not negotiated in favor of the student, but in favor of the institution. So where the major part of the work takes place is institutional rather than the person who contributes the most. So that's another part that creates these problematic interpersonal relationships. And of course, there's cross-institutional problems. These teams are distributed oftentimes across space. They're not co-located, but they're also across time zones as well as years. So if you're a four-year student and you're coming in at the beginning of your doctoral program under this grant and it's a 10-year program, you're not going to see the end of it, but someone's going to be picking up your work and using it. So what I call these are really strong PI legacies. And as a result, what I'm really beginning to see is that team members themselves develop very weak relationships. And the other way I've kind of started to describe it is this. It literally can be hundreds of people in low traffic networks, but they're strongly linked through their principal investigator. That's how they see and identify themselves. So the identity isn't with the task, and there's certainly low social identity, and the identity is more to the institution and the principal investigator. Many of the speakers this morning have talked about language issues, and I've been interviewing team scientists, and one of them said to me, sometimes we don't even understand that the same word that we're using is really different till we put it in practice. So not only is there a problem in different vernaculars and languages across disciplines, but even when they start to sit down and talk, they don't realize they're using the word differently until they get into the lab. And there the students have to grapple with it, or the technicians have to grapple with it rather than the PIs. And then that has to feed its way up. So in these weak member relationships, one of the two things I see occurring, people try to make them better. And the first one is they try to force meetings. And so one of the common things I hear is something like this. You have to go to your own meeting, and you have to go to a meeting of some other team. So each week, you've got to go to at least two meetings, or maybe 8 to 10 meetings, but you've got to go to two. Well, when you tell people you have to go to a meeting, you have just demotivated them to go anywhere, and certainly to a meeting, right? The other problem that I see in the meetings is that the meetings are oftentimes informational or presentational focused. They're not discussion focused. So people don't have that dialogue about ideas. They're simply presenting what they know or what they think they're going to do the next week in the lab, kind of what their goals and objectives are for the week or the month. They're really not having that sharing of information to create collaborative discussion and have dialogue. So as you can see, in a group of scientists who are working together in teams in a 5 or 10 year center is really a cast of hundreds. It's not a simple group of people. And how the institution identifies that as a team and how the PI network identifies that as a team is really fascinating. Sometimes, when I first started this work, I just got on and Googled team science. And one website would say, our team of 1,000 scientists. Well, that's not the kind of team that I'm accustomed to working with. And I would say that's really not a team. That may be a group of 1,000 people who co-identify in some way, but they're probably not working in an interactive fashion together. And the reason I believe that this interactive fashion is needed is because if you have social relationships and social identity with one another, that should increase your task identity. And I'm just wondering to what degree the lack of communication in terms of dialogue, discussion, and collaboration is dampening the innovative effects that we could be getting. This is made worse when patents and publications are the currency of your reward system. Who goes first on the publication, who gets credit for the publication, and whose name goes on the patent and can eventually reward themselves monetarily from that patent. As a result, I think Dan spoke earlier this morning about trust. I don't see it so much as trust first. I see it as a great deal of uncertainty. That we have created a system or a system has emerged or developed in team science where uncertainty rules. We don't know the people. We can't talk to them. Even if they use technology, they use technology for informational and presentational purposes rather than Skyping into a conversation. They'll video conference people presenting their posters for the week. So the things that they try to do in between to help these weak social relationships become stronger don't serve that purpose. They, in fact, make that distance, I think, even greater. And as a result of all these relational factors, demographic, interpersonal, the cross-institution, and the cross-disciplinary, what I would posit is that these factors inhibit information sharing and weaken cooperative social structures and perhaps then weaken innovation and development. And so it's another part to looking at not just what the task is, but how the people do the task that I believe is important. So in this next slide, I'm going to kind of demonstrate what I've been observing. So here are the four PIs, and we're going to use four to make it simple. Here are four PIs in their meeting. They're getting the idea for the grant. They have some administrative staff, you know, working with them, but they essentially create the grant. They get it funded, and then each PI goes off into his or her institution, his or her discipline, and then has students or technicians do lab work. And they're working, they're getting the stuff done, but when it comes back to really integrating anything, the PIs do it. And so what we're dropping out here are these wonderful conversations that could and should happen among all the people who are doing the science. And literally, depending on the size of the grant, this could be 20 people, this could be 100 people. This is where I think our innovation loss potentially is occurring, because we're not pulling up what they see as being potentially opportunistic. So in this third stage, we're coming back, and we do this periodically every year, every 6 months. And then we find new things that we need to be working on, and we go back to our institutions, we go back to our disciplines, and we again do these meetings. And we do these lab work, and we do it again institutionally. And then finally, you do that enough times, the grant is over, and we publish the results. And again, the people in the middle who've been doing the work don't contribute to those final results except to count their publication. What we did find in doing these observations is we had first done, there was a 10-year center, and we did the bibliometric analysis. And what we found in terms of what they said was interdisciplinary and what was interinstitutional, we didn't see the students reporting that. Oftentimes, in a meeting where all the PIs were, they couldn't point to the three other PIs outside their own institution. So that tells you something about how the relationships get built and established. Students and techs have a lot of conflict in the lab, and oftentimes it's over how clean the lab is. So depending on what you're sitting, I'm sure that's an issue, but it's not big conflict, it's the little conflict. The little conflict that seems to be getting in the way. I want to leave you with three points, and they're really questions, and I hope that it's something that we can, in agenda of team science, really start to work on. And the first one is this, is when we say team, where does that mean? What does that really mean? Where does that team interaction occur? Do we mean the team of hundreds? Do we mean the team of the PIs? Do we mean the team of the people in the lab? Do we mean the team of people who are authoring the article? All very different teams. So I think when we say team, we have to start to be able to identify what we mean and operationalize that. I would ask that same question this way, where does the interdisciplinary part of it happen? Does it happen in the lab? Does it happen at the meetings? Where does that happen? And certainly we have observed PI networks that do this much better than others. But still, the ones that do it better, the students meet with the students at the other institutions once a year. That's hardly enough to create a relationship to trust, particularly when you're talking about proprietary information, publications and patents. I would also posit this, is that I think one of the ways to start to change team science and its potential outcomes is to move from an instructional mode to a collaborative mode. Team science has been built upon the instructional mode, how we teach in college. And so that same structure gets built into the PI and other personnel relationships. And if there we could find a way to move it into being more collaborative rather than senior scholar tells junior scholar what to do. I think that could be potentially helpful. And then third is my, I think, is the real challenge. Obviously, I'm advocating that folks who do team science and who are working on complex problems and trying to find innovative solutions, that they meet face-to-face, they have some kind of a social identity, some kind of a glue or cohesion that pulls them together. And many of the people who come up and ask questions, the questions have really been communicative questions. How do we get the people to use common language? How do we help them see from other epistemologies and ontologies? Well, the result of that is interaction of some kind, if not face-to-face, then virtual interaction. And what my concern is, we're adding then additional tasks and work activities to an already full plate. So that makes it a particularly hard sell when we talk to PIs. What we have found out in the last 3 years is that having the graduate students and the PIs in a workshop doesn't do anything. We can tell them about how to better communicate, but that's not going to do it. We're going to have to restructure how the team actually works and be very clear what team we're talking about. The team has to, from my point of view, has to be modeled from the top and move down. But I would say this, that in virtually all the situations, the students are more ready to do this than the PIs. And they're eager and they're motivated. And so if we can capture that and get their enthusiasm going in the right direction, I believe that innovation will come. Thank you.